I saw a story today in the New York Times about Yazidi women who had been abducted by ISIS in Iraq. Now that ISIS has been forced out of Mosul, these women are starting to go home, but they're deeply scarred. There are some women, though, who chose to join ISIS and marry fighters. And now that ISIS is losing territory in Iraq and Syria, some of these women are being captured. So what happens to them and their children? Borzu Daragahi of BuzzFeed News has met with some of these people in Syria. Tell us about one of these women you met, Borzu.
Well, there was one in particular who, I think she was quite charming because she spoke very good English. And her story was somewhat, you had to feel some sympathy for her. She had a husband and three kids. She was living in the city of Homs. A regime sniper killed her husband, and she, you know, was trying to make it as a single mom in Damascus. The war got too much for her there. And, you know, it was murky, her reasons for doing this. But she ended up, she said, going to Raqqa in an attempt to get out of Syria and wound up getting trapped there. And in the time that she was there, she fell in love with a guy who was a Moroccan, a foreign fighter, who had come to join ISIS and had a kid with him as well. Mm. And so when the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces moved into Raqqa, she and her husband and their kids were caught. Her husband was taken to prison, and she was put in a refugee camp. They don't know what to do with her to some extent. Mm. And, you know, because she was an English teacher, she was very well able to tell her story. And it was, you know, full of contradictions, full of kind of holes. There was a few moments where it was kind of unexpectedly revealing. One thing she said that was rather interesting was, you know that ISIS are bad guys because they're losing, because they're losers. And if they were, you know, good guys, they would be winning now.
What did that suggest to you about her allegiance to the whole organization?
I mean, it's hard to say what's inside someone's heart. But my sense is that at some point in her life, at least, she believed in the cause. And she believed that this was, you know, the right way. And maybe she has second thoughts and so on. Keep in mind, these people are not accused of committing any crimes. They don't really have any blood on their hands or anything like that. They just seem to have joined or gotten engaged or married into a, you know, really horrible organization.
Right. I was going to ask you, I mean, so you've got this refugee camp with these kind of widows of ISIS fighters. How are these women being treated by their Kurdish captors?
From what we saw, they're being treated okay. You know, I mean, they're not really allowed to move around freely in the camp. It was awfully hot when we were there, and they were kind of stuck in this, you know, rather tough and muggy situation in terms of the temperature and overall climate. But they're being fed. There's no evidence that I saw that these women were being abused. The kids were playing.
What about the children? I mean, what kind of understanding do they have of what's happening to them and why?
This is a really tough, tricky question. You know, some of the older ones were confused and startled to be away from their fathers, wondering when the families will get back together. And some of the younger ones just really have no idea. You know, a lot of them were very, very small kids, you know, 1 year old, 2 years old. And it was, you know, quite clear that they basically saw this as just part of their life.
I mean, as you say, probably no blood on their hands, as far as we know. But what do they say? Like, man, what do they say about the atrocities committed by ISIS? Maybe by their own husbands.
Yeah, I mean, they all denied that their husbands were involved in any atrocities. In the case of the Tunisian woman, she insisted that her husband came to Syria, her husbands, two of them, came to Syria only to fight against the regime of Bashar al-Assad, that they weren't involved in any crimes and so on. But, you know, they tended to sort of gloss over the things that ISIS has done, the atrocities and so on.
Right. So with that sense of denial, was there any regret or repentance from any of these women?
I did not hear any. I heard, you know, repentance and regret about coming to Syria and joining ISIS, but I did not hear anything. And I, you know, provided a lot of opportunities in interviewing these women over a few hours for them to express any kind of remorse or sympathy for ISIS's many, many victims.
So, Borzu, after this assignment to Syria, have you been able to form an impression of where ISIS goes from here? I mean, they're losing territory, as that Syrian widow told you. They're losing and they're losers. So how are they adapting?
Well, it's hard to tell, you know. Doesn't it seem like the number of foreign attacks has also gone down? I have a feeling that ISIS's stock is declining quickly. You know, it's been somewhat discredited. I think that the global effort to stigmatize and discredit this organization is kind of bearing fruit, and that, you know, it's going to fade in the same and maybe similar way that Al-Qaeda has faded as a threat. But I think that, sadly, none of the issues that in part gave rise to these extremist jihadi groups has been resolved. The kind of sense of grievance among Sunnis in the Middle East and beyond, the sense of, you know, hurt and injustice that created the sort of fertile ground for ISIS to take hold in Syria and Iraq. And more likely than not, you're going to get like a, you know, Al-Qaeda 2.0 or ISIS 2.0 emerging from the rubble of the region.
Borzu Dorogahi of BuzzFeed News, thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure.